a vision of hell, the unspeakable torment of other species. As Ralph was saying, in terms of degenerative diseases and the impact of meat consumption, the statistic today is that the annual medical costs in the United States directly attributable to meat consumption total $60 to $120 billion, aside from the $500 billion annually that goes towards the military-industrial complex. We have to look at the diversion of funds that should be directed towards our social services and our own benefit with the annual medical costs in the United States. Vegetarians have blood cholesterol levels that are typically 14% less than non-vegetarians, and vegans, like Ralph and myself, our blood cholesterol level on general is 35% lower than meat eaters. Meat eaters have triple the rate of high blood pressure as compared to vegetarians. The obesity rate for the general population is 18%, while for vegans is 2%. And men who consume large amounts of dairy products, because dairy, the treatment of dairy cows is just as horrendous as it is for cows that are sent to slaughter. In fact, after dairy cows are no longer highly productive, they are turned into beef. And for men who consume large amounts of dairy products, they have a 70% increased risk of prostate cancer. 212-209-2950, a vision of hell, the unspeakable torment of other species. Ralph?
Well, it's systemic disease. When the immune system breaks down, normal processes like the metastasizing of cells can no longer be regulated. Systemic disease like cancer or heart disease are directly related to the consumption of decaying, rotting flesh and the toxification of the organism. We don't have the physiology of carnivores. Carnivores are very short intestines. They kill their prey immediately, and they the flesh is oxygenated, and they expel the waste as quickly. We're not structured in that fashion. So what we have here is the torment of our own species, not just the slaughter and the butchery of others. And the root of this is exploitation, and the social structures that require it are those which oppress. And the cruelty that arises from it is from numbing ourselves and subscribing to an ideology that allows us to be impervious to that which doesn't seem to affect us. That's the all-time continued method of the powerful, induce acquiescence amongst their own constituency, their own victims at the same time, to numb us to the reality of what we do to others and to deny what we are doing as a consequence to ourselves. You need the information, you need the analysis, you need the motivation, brothers and sisters, if I say so candidly, to open our eyes and to act on our new understanding.
212-209-2950. We have to note that a few people who've listened to A Vision of Hell have changed their ways and became vegetarians. They made the first step towards a non-exploitation of animals with the change in their diet. 212-209-2950. It is a program that you're going to want in your library, that you're going to want to share with all your friends and your family, and this is the moment to acquire it, because this is the only time it's going to be offered during the WBA fund drive. This is the last day of the official fund drive next week. There will be the special Martin Luther King programming for the fund drive, and Taking Aim will be preempted next Tuesday. So this is your only opportunity, A Vision of Hell, the unspeakable torment of other species, to show your gratitude to WBAI for broadcasting Taking Aim, and also to acquire this important information. 212-209-2950. We're unable to hear the phones. We assume you're calling. But it's not just a matter of one or two or three calls. We want to keep all those phone lines lit. Keep trying now. 212-209-2950. 2950. Ralph?
Let's just take a quick look at what these relationships entail. The primary method of colonial exploitation is the elimination of food self-sufficiency amongst exploited peoples. The peoples of Africa, Asia, and Latin America were food self-sufficient. And what capitalism and colonialism imposed were not food crops, but commodity crops. Sugar, coffee, sisal, tea, commodities, rubber. That replaced rice and sorghum and grains and root vegetables on which these populations sustained themselves. India, China, all these countries were not just food self-sufficient, but rice self-sufficient. They import it now. That's the consequence of imposing cash crops on subject peoples. And then food is monopolized by the great agro-corporations, Archer Daniels Midlands and others. And they impose on the people who were producing their own food a huge cost for importing the foods that they once produced themselves, while they work for sweatshop wages to produce commodities. And the consequence of this relationship of exploitation and profiteering is that it relates not just to our species, but to all. In fact, 1.4 billion human beings could be fed by the grain consumed by the livestock just in the United States. It would take 12 million tons of grain to feed every person who dies of hunger and hunger-related diseases each year, a fraction of what is used to slaughter, to sustain and then slaughter the animal. 27 million animals are slaughtered each day in the United States, 19,000 a minute, $10 billion a year.
Animals
a year, not dollars. You're right, Maya. And that in itself is a fragment of the global total because corporate capitalism doesn't operate within the frontiers of our country alone. It exploits the resources and the populations across the planet. It's a planetary system of greed, exploitation, of misery and death, of systemic disease, and of unspeakable cruelty. Those are the relationships here. And when we talk, as does Charles Patterson in his book, Eternal Treblinka, about a relationship between the industrial slaughterhouse and such things as the Holocaust, I have to say that the victims of the Holocaust are not immune to their to the indifference, to cruelty to others, particularly amongst them. As we have done in our book, The Hidden History of Zionism, the Israeli state itself, such as Elie Wiesel, who moralize about the consequences of the Holocaust and are wholly indifferent to the persecution, the exploitation of the Palestinian people. The victims of the Zionist movement, for that matter, the victims of the Holocaust are the victims of the Zionist movement who collaborated with the Nazis and colluded in the subjugation of the indigenous Jews because they wanted colonizers afar to be supported and armed by the most repressive and imperialist regimes of the day, including that of Nazi Germany. Why do I mention these relationships? Because if we don't understand that it is exploitation and imperial dominion and the structures of power that require it that are the root of all this, then we are not in a position to equip ourselves to fight back. The Zionist movement is but a small portion of an overall system of subjugation. And as we've dealt with and discussed in the Hidden History of Zionism, the relationship between the Holocaust and the Zionist movement is one-to-one. Collaboration, betrayal of the Jews of Europe, just as we collaborate in the subjugation of victim species, of victim peoples, and we close our eyes to the structures of power that are required to maintain these things. We victimize ourselves when we victimize others. That's an old moral understanding and truth, but it is rooted in a concrete reality. And we have to address it, we have to face it, we have to experience it, we have to internalize it, and we have to act on it.
212-209-2950, A Vision of Hell, The Unspeakable Torment of Other Species. It's your political act for the day. 212-209-2950. A Vision of Hell, The Unspeakable Torment of Other Species, our 2-CD package, $100 premium for our gift to you and your contribution to WBAI. 212-209-2950. And now we're going to yet another excerpt from this. Now, remember, these are excerpts. To hear the entire program, it is your opportunity to contribute to WBAI. While it's the last day of the fund drive, and if you have already made a contribution, call your friends. Go in this together. Each of you contribute. Four people, $25 each, will get you the contribution up to $100 for the premium. Or if you're in a position to donate more to WBAI, this is the moment to do it. A $500 contribution, a $1,000 contribution, a $5,000 contribution, your $10,000 contribution will make the difference for sustaining WBAI. It is money well spent. And at this moment, 212-209-2950. Ralph, one last word before we go on to another excerpt.
I just want to say this, brothers and sisters. From our own lives and from those of our loved ones and our families, we know the consequence of cancer, of heart disease, of glaucoma, of Parkinsonism, of arthritis, of diabetes, of the systemic disease that limits our lives, that shortens them and subjects us to suffering and torment. We know the consequence of the medical industrial complex, which is poison chemicals that pass as drugs and which treat disease symptomatically instead of systemically. This is all connected to our exploitation of other living creatures. It then comes back upon ourselves. That's the importance of this programming. That's the reason why we are so insistent that a vision of hell be integrated within our vision of revolutionary transformation, which is a prerequisite for survival of not only our species, but of all species on this planet. The programming is required for it. Arm yourselves with the information. Support it. Keep truth to power being spoken on the airwaves. Please support Taking Aim. And please subscribe to the vision of hell, the unspeakable torment of other species.
Michael, we're ready for the next excerpt.
The kill line at Fraser's plants are 210 birds a minute. This means workers must grab and hang 21 to 23 chickens a minute. Ralph?
And that torment of the workers parallels the unspeakable, barbarous treatment of the animals themselves. The transformation of animals into food is a process out of hell. Indeed, if we take it animal by animal, the pig, when they are held in 8 to 6 square feet per pig, and the sows are in tiny cages so narrow that they can't even turn around. They live over metal grates, and their waste is pushed through slats beneath them into huge pits. While pregnant for 16 weeks, mother pigs are kept in gestation crates and stalls where they do not have room to turn around. After the piglets are born, they moved into a farrowing crate or strait where they still cannot turn around or move. Once the piglets are weaned, if the mother pig is not slaughtered, she is given a short period of brief movement and is reimpregnated and put back into the gestation stall. They never receive more room to move. In the U.S., virtually all farmed birds are raised in factory farms. Under these crowded and stressful conditions, chickens peck at each other. And to combat this, as I mentioned before, the workers cut off two-thirds of their beaks with a hot knife, causing severe pain. The birds cannot eat after debeaking and starve. In poorly ventilated buildings, manure fumes exacerbate respiratory infections, cause eye infections and other damage. Dust and gases accumulate at concentrations that overwhelm not only the animals to whom it is invariably fatal, but the human workers themselves. Up to 6 hens live in a battery cage with a wire floor area of 1.7 square feet. These conditions cause lameness, bone brittleness, osteoporosis, and muscle dissipation. With increased knowledge of the behavior and cognitive abilities of the chicken, reports Dr. Leslie Rogers in The Development of Brain and Behavior in the Chicken, in his book in 1995, comes the realization that the chicken is not an inferior species, but is a cognizant and cognitive creature experiencing both emotion and pain. In 1888, the average hen laid 100 eggs per year. In 1998, it was 256. At the end of their laying cycle, the U.S. hens are slaughtered or force-molted by removing food and water for days to shock their bodies into another laying cycle. Once the flock's production goes down, they get rid of the hens. They are not saleable for meat, so no care is used in removing them from their cages. The claws have grown around the wires. They are ripped out. They are gassed in huge barrels. They are removed with clippers. 30,000 hens alive forced into wood chippers. Egg-laying hatcheries have no use for the male chicks. They are killed by suffocation in plastic bags, decapitation, gassing, and crushing. Broiler chickens now raised for meat grow so rapidly that the heart and lungs are not developed enough to support the remainder of the body. And so it goes. People are led to believe that they do not hurt cows by drinking their milk. When you learn what is done to the udder and how, in fact, the milk is forced from the cow, you get a very different understanding. Indeed, dairy cows rarely get to nurse their young. 1/3 of male calves are slaughtered immediately. 40% are raised for special feed. These calves are kept in individual stalls, chained by the neck, for 20 weeks at a time without being able to move and before they are slaughtered.
Ralph, Veal, A Cruel Meal, it was published by animal rights people in Britain. But it describes in tragic detail the life of the young cow. The veal calf industry, they state, is one of the most reprehensible of all the kinds of intensive animal agriculture. Veal calves are a byproduct of the dairy industry. They are manufactured by milk machines, that is, the dairy cows. The male calves, as you said, are taken from their mothers shortly after birth. Some are slaughtered soon after birth for Bob Veal, and others are raised in open pens, a kind of minimum security prison. But even they are chained. But for the most part, the young male calves are destined for the veal crate. The veal crate is a wooden restraining device that is the calf's permanent home. It's only 22 inches by 54 inches, so small that the calves, as they grow, cannot turn around or even lie down and stretch. It's the ultimate in high-profit confinement animal agriculture. It is designed to prevent movement and exercise. The crate does its job by atrophying the calves' muscles, because then the tender gourmet veal, is produced. The calves are chained around their neck. They cannot groom themselves even with their tongues, which is the normal animal habit. They have can only move a few inches back and forth. So if they do want to lie down, they have to contort their bodies. And as they grow, they cannot even do that. The calves are kept in darkness, except for 20 minutes three times a day when they are fed. Now, this is three times a day, but a normal calf would suckle its mother 16 times a day. The calves are fed a milk substitute that's intentionally lacking in iron and other essential nutrients. This keeps the animal anemic, so to create the pale pink or white color that is so desired in gourmet veal. Craving iron, the animals lick their urine-saturated slats and any metallic parts of the stalls. But farmers withhold water from the animals, who are always thirsty, so that they'll drink large quantities of the high-fat liquid feed. These young calves are in chronic stress, and so they're and also because of the restricted diet and the unhealthy living conditions, they're susceptible to a long list of diseases, pneumonia, and constant diarrhea. Thus, they're given massive doses of antibiotics and other drugs just to keep them alive. Their fate, when they reach 350 pounds, which is about 14 weeks after birth, they are slaughtered. Ralph?
What about fish? Most fish are long-lived, have complicated nervous systems, and are capable of learning complicated tasks. This is a quote from the textbook of medical physiology of Guyman and Halls in 1996. The tower regions of the brain, which all vertebrates have, are important in the appreciation of the suffering, all types of pain, because these animals, with their brains sectioned above the mesencephalon to block pain signals reaching the cerebrum, evince undeniable evidence of suffering when any part of the body is traumatized. Billions of these creatures are asphyxiated with hooks ripping their throats and their intestines, with nets that strangle them in agony. And each year, over 300,000 dolphins and other marine animals snagged in fishing nets die as these floating nets ensnare them across oceans. The slaughter and the butchery of fish is no less replete with pain and suffering.
Ralph, the result of the 300,000 whales, dolphins, and porpoises that are caught in the fishing nets, the study can be read on the website of the World Wildlife Fund. That's www.panda.org. And they give a comprehensive study that shows not only the death of these fish, but the destruction of the species that is taking place, from the purse seines, the long lines, the ghost nets, the gill nets, the drift nets, the pair trawling, and other means of fishing. The cetacean species that are risking extinction are the bahi or Chinese river dolphin, the common dolphin, the false killer whale, the harbor porpoise, Hector's dolphin, Iriadoi dolphin, Maui's dolphin, northern right whale, sei whale, sperm whale, spinner dolphin, spotted dolphin, tuxi, and vaquita. And I recommend that everyone look at this, the extinction of species through the fishing industry. As
you've been listening to A Vision of Hell,
Unspeakable torment of other species.
Excuse me. 212-209-2950 for your contribution of $100 to WBAI. We present you today our gift to you, The Vision of Hell, The Unspeakable Torment of Other Species, two CDs, two packed CDs. I mean, this is not happy talk. This is not music. This is analysis, information for 2 full hours. A Vision of Hell, The Unspeakable Torment of Other Species, covering what it means to destroy, to market, to harvest, to produce farm animals, what it does for to the animals, what it does to human beings. In the second CD, which we'll play excerpts from at 5 o'clock, we talk about the experimentation for the pharmaceutical industry and for pseudoscience. And, yes?
Yeah, well, you know, there's another dimension to this, brothers and sisters, too. I mean, there's a certain species chauvinism which is analogous not only to national chauvinism, but to racism and other forms of self-indulgent and discriminatory mindsets. It's species chauvinism which allows us to deny the capacities of other living creatures. Just recently in the New York Times, there was an acknowledgement that now scientists have established that the cerebral capacities of birds, you know the old saying, bird brains, the complexity of the cerebrum of birds is extraordinary, and of the neurocentric concentration of fiber that allows the most sophisticated communication, and of sensory capacity in parrots and in other species. That's not less true of fish. Here, the most recent studies establish that fish not only have the complex capacities of communication, but they have an exquisite sensitivity to pain. Quote, even though fish don't scream, they are in pain and anguish when they are subjected to the hook or netted. It has been shown that fish, like other vertebrates, have a highly developed system that sensitizes them to pain. Their system releases natural opiate-like substances when they are injured. Pain-dampening opiate systems demonstrate that there is a huge capacity to experience pain. Otherwise, the animals would not evolve this system in the first place, not unlike primates and Homo sapiens. Dutch researcher John Behergen and his co-workers have demonstrated that the pain resulting from injury by the hook is devastating. Try to imagine, brothers and sisters, if our entire weight were hanging from a hook in our throats, or in our esophagus, or in our trachea, as we strangled to death and bled to death and experienced the agony and the terror of the experience of the condition. It's a failure of imagination, a refusal to register what is before our eyes that allows us to be numb to the unspeakable cruelty that we inflict and the suffering of other living things. That is the gravamen of this vision of hell. That is why it's important, I suggest, that all of us face it, acquaint ourselves with its reality, internalize it, and act upon it. Please sustain the programming, avail yourself of the information, of the analysis, support Free Speech Radio, support Taking Aim.
Rob, one aspect of the destruction of the fish species and also the destruction of the ecosystem of the ocean that isn't discussed often was noted by the Audubon Society in its May 18, 2003 article on the Internet about bycatch and its indiscriminate slaughter at sea. And bycatch and bykill are the unintended catch of animals associated with commercial fishing operations. That is the majority who are discarded back into the ocean. They're already dead or they're dying, and it is the result of most of the fishing with long lines and drift nets, which are destructive fishing practices where you're pulling in whatever is in the ocean, in the water, swimming by at the time. And globally, there is 20 million metric tons, that's 44.1 billion pounds annually of bycatch. 70% of the world's important commercial fish species were fully exploited, overexploited, depleted, or are recovering from depletion, and in the United States, more than 80% of marine fish populations that have been evaluated are classified as fully fished or overexploited, and many species do not exist anymore. Ralph.
The criteria we're describing here speak for themselves. Overfished? Suppose we applied that category to human beings. Overculled? If we were talking about culling humans, we would understand the enormity of this. There isn't an acceptable limit. It's not a question of 1 trillion instead of 17 trillion fish that are destroyed. It's a question of what we are doing to other species. As the marine biologist Michael Payne noted, fish, and I quote, fish cry out both in pain and in fear. Most sound-producing fish vocalize when prodded, held, or chased. In experiments by William Tavolga, toadfish grunt when electrically shocked. What's more, they come to grunt at the mere sight of an electrode. And, of course, the registering of pain and fear on the nervous system a fish no less than another species is as acute as it is in Homo sapiens. Let's stop deluding ourselves about these artificial barriers that we erect to numb ourselves and to deny the cruelty and reality of the suffering that we impose. The slaughter is not just slaughter, it's torture and torment as well.
Yes, Ralph, but when you look at the what the Audubon Society is talking about, or the World Wildlife Funds, from the point of view of the exploitation of the world's resources, what they are saying is that with this capitalist process, that they are people are destroying the very animals upon whom they have relied for their food sources, and are destroying the ecosystem that sustained them. And I agree with you that the very concept, the very notion of the over-exploitation is in itself inappropriate. Look what's been done to sharks, for instance. Nature, in a science update on February 12, 2004, noted that oceanic white-tipped sharks, once the most common shark in the world, are almost completely extinct, according to a census that was done in 2004 in the Gulf of Mexico. Over the past 50 years, their numbers have crashed by more than 99% in the Gulf, and researchers think that the same drop has happened around the world. The extinction of animals, and as we know, when it's the demise of one creature, this also leads to the demise of other creatures in the ecosystem, just as when we destroy trees in the Amazon, we are destroying the oxygen upon which we rely to breathe and sustain our own life. Right.
The constant of the preparation on an industrial basis of an animal food supply is, quote, physical mutilation, from debeaking and chopping of toes and feet and tails, routine husbandry practices in all modern factory farms. Procedures such as castration, dehorning, routinely performed without anesthesia on billions of farm animals each year. Farm animals raised in intensive operations from the moment they open their eyes until they close them cannot perform the most basic behaviors, turning around, walking, flapping wings, moving due to the size of the cages, the overcrowding, in order to maximize profit. There's no way to prettify this. There's no way to disguise the horror of it. There's no way to disguise the consequences of it, because the animals are autotoxifying from the chemicals that they release in their systems over the terror, not to mention the fecal matter that is informing the food supply, bacteria that we've described. This is a system of death and destruction for its victims and for its victimizers.
Ralph, I'd like to refer again to Temple Grandin. In her chapter of Animals in Translation, she has one called Animal Feelings, and she discusses rapist roosters. A chicken farmer, she writes, told me that half of his roosters were rapist murderers. I was stunned when I heard that. There is no species alive in nature where half the males kill reproductive age females. There had to be something seriously wrong with those birds. And what Grandin notes is that normal roosters, of course, do not kill hens. But what you do have now is that all of the chicken meat and eggs that are eaten by human beings come from hybrid birds. In other words, a chicken is not a chicken. Chicken is a manufactured animal. And with this breeding, as you see with what has happened with dogs and the advent of incredible diseases such as with collies, today, most of them are subject to blindness, and in some animals, such as borzois, they have to be helped to, when they're puppies, they have to be helped to nurse because their noses, their snouts are so long that they're unable to nurse. And the same thing is happening now with chickens. And what happened with this farmer is that through the hybridization of the chickens, in order to get faster-growing chickens, they have weaker legs and hearts, and chickens with bigger breasts and more white meat, they produce other aspects, other character traits. And as a result, they were producing rapist roosters.
Well, the deformation and the destruction of living things. Charles Patterson in The Eternal Treblinka cites a great deal of literature, which he integrates and organizes with great effectiveness, regarding what he calls the eternal Treblinka. One Englishman observer, he quotes, states, "It is interesting what still reaches a slaughterman's calloused heart, calloused by the job he's commissioned to do by the consumer. For one man, it is goats. They cry like babies. For a veteran blood and guts disposal man, it's carrying three-day-old calves to the shooting box and destroying them with a captive bolt. An American worker reports that to kill the calves faster, they put eight or nine in the knocking box at the same time. As soon as they start going in, you start shooting the calves. They're jumping, they're piling on top of each other. You don't know which ones get shot, which ones don't get shot. They drown at the bottom. They're hanged alive. They go down the line, wriggling and yelling. The babies, 2-3 weeks old, I felt bad killing them, so I just let them walk past. But they were killed later on. They did those baby calves no favor by letting them walk fast. They were fully conscious when the workers further down the line hanged, bled, and cut them up. The slaughter man's fingers are sucked by the suckling creature in hope of drawing milk, and he doesn't get the milk of human kindness. The author writes, this is what we call indifference, numbing indifference to the torment we impose. In slave societies, the practices that are used to control animals were precisely those that were used to control slaves. Castration, branding, whipping, chaining, ear cropping. As Charles Patterson says, the ethic of human domination that removed animals from the sphere of human concern and obligation legitimized the ill treatment of those humans, supposedly in an animal condition. In fact, he's quoting there the writer Keith Thomas. So this, again, from every vantage, is the relationship that sustains the slaughter and the cruelty. There is no way to drive a wall of protection treatment of human beings and the treatment of other living creatures, because it is a structure of abuse. It is a systemized method of profiteering and of advantaging at the price of great cruelty and of victimization. It cannot be confined to one arena as opposed to another. If you have a social order that is predicated upon such practice, its victims will be legion, and they are. Across time, across boundaries, across generations, and across species.
212-209-2950. Remember, we rely upon you to make the telephone call here over the phone. We cannot hear the phones ringing. There are wonderful volunteers in the pledge room waiting to speak to you, to give you information. Aside from the premium we're offering to you, A Vision of Hell, The Unspeakable Torment of Other Species, there are the other WBAI premiums. There is a membership for you. The membership, Michael can later tell you the different levels of membership, the low-income membership, the sustainers, and again, for those of you who are able to do so, a larger contribution is greatly appreciated. Also available, remember we had Buried Alive, the torture of the human beings in the prison industrial system today. And this is, again, a gripping 3-CD package. But today, first and foremost, on the agenda, A Vision of Hell, The Unspeakable Torment of Other Species. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. We don't want to keep on playing excerpts unless it's as a reward. This is the positive reinforcement system of training that is one that really produces much more results. As your reward for your contributions, we will continue with the vision of hell, the unspeakable torment of other species.
And we have
on
some,
the phone.
We have some people to thank if you'd like me to do that at
yes,
this point.
Yes, great.
Okay, thank you very much to Michael Berenswig from Jamaica, New York. Thank you very much, Michael. Elaine Wright from Brooklyn, New York, called in for a pledge, with her pledge of support to WBAI. Charlie from Plainfield, New Jersey, called in with a pledge of support for Taking Aim, and we'll be getting Visions of Hell. Terrell McClendon from St. Albans, New York, 212-209-2950. Thomas Hatfield from Staten Island, New York, called in. Nancy Kogel from New York City. William Brown from New York City also called in, 212-209-2950. Linda Cartier from Matawan, New Jersey. Thank you very much, Linda. Brian R. Bennett from Setauket, New York, at 209-2950, area code 212. Carlos Sanchez from Maplewood, New Jersey. Edward Lewis from New Rochelle, New York. This is WBAI in New York, a special edition of Taking Aim. Daniel Vasquez from Brooklyn, New York, and Colleen Gallo from Boonton, New Jersey. They have called in. They have become members of WBAI, and some, if not all, are getting the premium that Maya Schoen and Ralph Schoenman are offering this afternoon. Vision, a vision of hell, the unspeakable torment of other species, a 2-CD premium for a pledge of $100. 212-209-2950. And I know, Maya and Ralph, you want to go back to programming, and we'll let you do that. I just want to let folks know that if you have some time and can come down to the radio station this evening, particularly a little after 6 o'clock, around 7 o'clock or so, we're located at 120 Wall Street on the 10th floor. Bring some photo ID to gain entry into the building and come on upstairs and help answer the phones. We could use you right now. There's three people in the tally room right now, and we need your help and your participation as well, but we do need you to call. Please call now, 212-209-2950.
Ralph?
Yes. Quote, as each new hog is shackled and hung upside down, the cumulative sound of the shrieking becomes so loud that the uproar is overwhelming. The high squeals and low squeals, the grunts and wails of agony, and then the momentary low, but then a fresh outspurt, louder than those before, surging up to a deafening climax. It was too much for some of the visitors. The men would look at each other laughing nervously. The women would stand with hands clenched and the blood rushing to their faces and the tears starting in their eyes. Sue Coe, in her book Dead Meat, describes the slaughterhouse. This place is dirty, filthy. Flies swarm everywhere. The walls, floors, everything, everywhere are covered with blood. The chains are caked with dried blood. Steers 12 feet long from hoof to hoof are strung up so high the workers have to stand on platforms. As she walks onto the kill floor to position herself with her sketchbook in the doorway between where the cows are lined up for slaughter and the kill floor, a loud horn sounds and the workers disperse for lunch. So I am left alone with six dripping, decapitated corpses, blood splashed on the walls, already on my sketchbook. I get used to being covered with flies, just like the corpses. She looks inside a knocking pen. Inside is a cow. She has not been stunned and has slipped and fallen in the blood. The men have gone to lunch and left her. Time passes. She struggles, banging the sides of the cage. And the description continues. And here is a rather compelling instance of the impact on a rather unexpected person. when witnessing the horror of the slaughterhouse, when experiencing directly what it is that goes into his breakfast and his meal. The following individual responded as such. President Theodore Roosevelt threw his breakfast sausages out of the White House window. Well, Theodore Roosevelt is the man who led the Rough Riders in their slaughter of the Cubans as he invaded Cuba for Spain. But when confronted by the reality of his breakfast, he threw his sausages out the window.
Well, he also had his walls covered in the...
In the big game trophies that he personally killed. But the point here is that even the benighted, when confronted firsthand by the meaning of what they do, can come to a limited realization. We can go somewhat further than Theodore Roosevelt and his ilk. I think it's a gravamen of what we're doing.
No, Ralph, it's no coincidence that when people buy their meat, they're buying it packaged and cleaned and cut. And how often do you hear somebody say that they can only eat a fish if the head is cut off?
Yes, and you're looking at the... when you go to the butcher shop next time, brothers and sisters, when you go into your Safeway Market or your Ralph Supermarket or Andronico's or any of these supermarkets, and you go to the butcher department and you look at these hunks of flesh, just imagine that they are your co-workers and your children and your aunts and your mothers and your fathers in hunks of dripping blood and wrapped in cellophane. If you can extend your imagination to realize that you're looking at what was once a living creature, a sentient creature, I think the point will come home.
Ralph, we said before that we were going to play an excerpt that dealt with the consequences to human beings, and now is the time to do so. We return to a last of our excerpts from the first CD, and then we will move on. You had something to say first?
Well, I wanted to just make one point before we do. The assembly line slaughter today is no different than it was a century ago. As Charles Patterson quotes one of the observers of the slaughterhouse, the process still begins with the knocker. Instead of the sledgehammer, the knocker uses a captive bolt pistol, the stun gun. It fires a 5-inch steel bolt into the animal's brain. The splitter continues to be the most skilled worker on the kill floor. He splits the carcass with a bandsaw rather than with a giant cleaver. The boners and trimmers still use razor-sharp knives to cut the meat off the carcass, and the knife and the meat hook are the basic tools today of the industry. Butchery and slaughter doesn't change, brothers and sisters, and the suffering is no less.
A vision of hell, the unspeakable torment of other species. Remember, you can go to your phone while you're listening to the excerpts, because that will be in hand for you very soon when you have your own copy. 212-209-2950. Vision of Hell, the Unspeakable Torment of Other Species, our last excerpt from the first CD.
It's essential that we also understand the nature and inherent structure of Homo sapiens as an animal and as a creature, because Homo sapiens, human beings, like all other primates, have the physiological structure predominantly of herbivores. We do not have ripping teeth, we have grinding teeth. We lack the hydrochloric acid in the intestine and in the gut to break down bone and flesh. But above all, we have long, 25-foot-long, 26-foot-long intestines compared to the short intestines, the short gut, of meat-eating creatures. And there's a very fundamental reason for this. When flesh dies, when it is no longer oxygenated, it putrefies, it becomes carrion. You understand that when a corpse is created and is no longer oxygenated, it proceeds to decay. It has to be put underground, or you have to put formaldehyde on it, because it immediately begins to putrefy and to rot and to generate high rate production of toxins. You can color it, you can dye it, you can do this to that to it, but it is a putrefying mass of decaying flesh. And with our long intestines, what happens is this. We house the decaying flesh in our transverse colon, in our descending colon, pockets of putrefying flesh. The waste is 8%, 8% of human weight, sometimes as much as 10%. And these pockets of putrefying, decaying waste are housed in our gut, in our intestines, in our colon, not for days, but for weeks and for months and for years, flooding the system with toxins. And as a consequence, the detoxifying organs of the body, the kidney and the liver, are overstressed and overworked, and they become 80% and 70% and 60% efficient. And now as toxins permeate the cell structure of the body, the immune system is overwhelmed. And normally processes such as the metastasizing in cells, which are regulated by white blood cells and by other mechanisms of the body, no longer are able to be detained or restrained by the functioning of a weakened immune system, and systemic disease becomes endemic. We are primates. Our structure is that of herbivores, meat-eating creatures, or carnivores of very short intestines, because when they kill prey, and it's fresh prey, and it's consumed immediately, it's evacuated immediately, and the structure of the colon is such that it is expelled without the requirement of fiber. The structure of the primate colon is entirely different and requires fiber in order to expel, and as a consequence, whereas in a meat-eating animal the elimination is immediate, in an herbivore the retention of decaying flesh toxifies the system on a permanent basis. Homo sapiens, for various social reasons and historical reasons which have to do with the ownership of property, with the structure of power and ownership through institutionalized possession, consume animals, possess animals, and torment animals, but at a cost to the health of the species that is incalculable.
Ralph, in 1988, the U.S. Surgeon General published a report on nutrition and health, in which the Surgeon General stated that 70% of, or 1.5 million of the 2.1 million deaths in the United States in 1987 were directly associated, these diseases, particularly with diet. Diets high in saturated fat and cholesterol from the eating of meat. Now, this is 1988. Now there are 2.4 million deaths in the United States in 1999. Cardiovascular operations, 5.8 million in 1999. The U.S. has the primary cause of death are these cardio related to heart disease. And the second is cancer, such that now U.S. males have a 1 in 2 probability, according to the Almanac, of developing invasive cancer at some time in his life. And women have a 1 in 3 chance of developing cancer. Now, there was a big shift from eating beef after the Surgeon General's report, despite all the ads for eat beef, and a switch to chicken. But a study by the National Cancer Institute showed that oven-broiled, pan-fried, or grilled barbecue chicken carries an even bigger load of carcinogens than does red meat. And the more you cook it, the worse it gets. A well-done hamburger itself contains a big dose of carcinogens, 33 nanograms per gram of the carcinogen PHIP, and a well-done steak has 30 nanograms per gram. But grilled chicken reached 480 nanograms per gram. And also, the cholesterol content of beef and chicken is actually the same, and their fat content is not much different.
Well, what indeed is involved here is not only the inappropriateness of flesh decaying carrion as a suitable food for Homo sapiens, but it is as well the ways in which the food supply is provided, because we get it at one remove. As Dick Gregory likes to say, I've never met a cow that ate a steak. The animals that we torment and consume, whether they're pigs or chickens or cows or horses, are themselves herbivores. They are creatures that are gaining their nutrition from the consumption of grasses and grains and roots. And so we, indeed, depend upon their processing of these to get them at one remove, and they're not suited to our particular physiology or structure. It is endemic and systemic disease that is the consequence for Homo sapiens. And not only is it a consequence of eating the flesh, but the factory and the capitalist system through which this becomes huge industrial production requires destruction of the food chain on a planetary scale. All of the arable land that would be suitable for the production of self-sustaining agriculture is now, for the most part, given over to production for the animal chain. Indeed, grains are no longer grown primarily for human consumption, but are used as animal feed, and the animals themselves, a system for which profit is the primary motive, are then produced as food in the manner that we have described. And it is no less true for dairy, because what is not generally understood is that the enzyme for metabolizing lactose is possessed by a few tribes and peoples on the planet. Most Homo sapiens, most human beings, are unable to metabolize lactose. And the structure, the molecular structure of the milk of a cow, which is suitable to an animal of a half ton, is wholly unsuited to Homo sapiens, which, as a consequence, what the fat, the saturated fat, and the casein of dairy products produces is mucus, congestion, indigestion, and systemic disease, respiratory ailments on a huge scale. And the dairy industry, which is itself an enormous engine of profit, pumps propaganda and perpetual production that's subsidized by the state for milk production and cheese production, which is not necessary to the sustaining of human life, but on the contrary is antithetical to it.
Ralph, in fact, in 1978... the dairy industry ranked only second to the American Medical Association in donations to congressional campaigns, according to Common Cause. Now, you mentioned the where nutrition knowledge is derived, and it's interesting because it was with the National Dairy Council, which was formed in 1915 to provide educational materials, and by 1941 was funding the research at the universities about nutrition and provided the curriculum kits to schools and held workshops to train teachers about nutrition and to promote milk products. And what the government, the USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, it set a minimum price for milk and then bought what the farmers couldn't sell to the public for that price, a full subsidy. These leftovers were provided to the USDA as butter, American cheese, non-fat dry milk, which was distributed to schools, military, prisons, to the poor under the welfare programs, and now is sent overseas to other nations where people are lactose intolerant as well. That is, they don't have the enzyme to break down the milk sugar. It is provided as non-fat milk and sent abroad.
And the primary byproduct of the milk and the cheese and the dairy products, which is the ingredient called casein, is what is used in Elmer's glue. It clogs up your arteries, it clogs up your respiratory tract, and it clogs up your gut no less than it does the glue that is produced by Elmer.
You have been listening to Taking Aim. Ralph, would you like to conclude in the last moment?
We're going to be covering the corporate profit and the testing on animals in our part two of this program. But it should be understood that people who eat meat are 40% more likely to die of heart attack, 50% more likely to obtain cancer. Systemic diseases including stroke, obesity, appendicitis, osteoporosis, arthritis, diabetes, and food poisoning. The accumulation of pesticides and chemicals is 14 times more concentrated than those in any plant food. Factory farms leave behind an environmental toll that generations will be forced to address.
Listening to Taking Aim.